Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari. Yasoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Navanatira Vanachari. Munatira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Kishore Kishori Ki Jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai. Gornitai Ki Jai, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees. So we are on this day of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doing a Srimad Bhagavatam class, which is dealing with a somewhat different topic. So it's the 10th canto, the first chapter, and the 10th verse. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we can chant responsibly. Vraje vasan kim akaron. Madhupuryam cha keshavaha. Priratsaram chavadi shamsam. Matsur adhatat arhanam. Vrajevasan kim akaron. Madhupuryam cha keshavaha. Pritaram chavadi kamsam. Matsur adhatat arhanam. Vrajevasan kim akaron. Madhupuryam cha keshavaha. Prataram chavadi kamsam. Matur adhatat arhanam. Please chant. Vrajevasam kim akaron. Madhupuryam cha keshava. Bharatam vabadikam sam. Matsur adhatat arhanam. Prajevasana kimakaron. Madhupuriam chakeshavaha. Patsaram chavadi kamsam. Matsur adhatat arhanam. Okay, we'll do the word by word. Vraje, at Vrindavan, Vasan, while residing, Kim Akaron, what did he do? Madhupuriam, in Mathura, Cha, and Keshava, Krishna, the killer of Keshi, Pritaram, the brother, Cha, and Abadir, killed, Kamsam, Kamsa, Matsu, of his mother, Adha, directly, Atad Arhanam, which was not at all sanctioned by the Shastras. So the translation to text 10. Lord Krishna lived in Vrindavan and in Mathura. What did he do there? Why did he kill Kamsa, his mother's brother? Such killing is not at all sanctioned in the Shastras. Sorry. And purport by Srila Prabhupada. One's maternal uncle, the brother of one's mother, is on the level of one's father. When a maternal uncle has no son, his nephew legally inherits his property. Therefore, why did Krishna directly kill Kamsa, the brother of his mother? Maharaj Parikshit was very much inquisitive about the facts in this regard. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Vanchakalpa Tribhya Shakripa Sandhubhya Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Bhutale Srimata Roma Padaswami Iti Namine Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Navishesha Sunyavadi Paschacya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I don't know if the light's a little bit poorer, maybe because of the ribbons, or maybe it's that the chandelier is sometimes on. I don't know if it's possible to put on the chandelier, but it might help. I don't know. Is it possible? So, this is the third question raised by Maharaj Parikshit to Sukadeva Goswami. And the question is, why did Krishna kill his mother, Devaki's brother, Kamsa? Oh, thank you very much. Very helpful. So, the implication is that Krishna should not have done that, since Kamsa was his mother's brother. So this is an implication that actually is highlighted by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in commenting on this particular verse in Sarita Darshini. Now, Srila Prabhupada, just to really highlight that point, Srila Prabhupada points to the status of the maternal uncle. He's at the level of one's father, meaning the brother of one's mother. It's equivalent to one's father in terms of the regard one has to have for him. So this fact is borne out even by law. Srila Prabhupada points that out, that the property of the maternal uncle, so one's mother's brother, it becomes legally the property of the nephew should that maternal uncle not have a son himself. So I found myself looking at this verse in a particular way, and this morning I had a very different slant on it, so we'll see how it progresses. At the same time that Maharaj Parikshit is asking this question, we recall him establishing his own position with regard to how he views Lord Krishna. So this is very important. So I'm going to read the verse where he actually, it becomes clear what his position is in regard to Lord Krishna. Taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather Arjuna and others crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishma Dev resembled great fish that would very easily have swallowed them. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which was very difficult to cross, as easily as one steps over the footprint of a calf. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Sudarshan Chakra in hand entered her womb and saved my body, the body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashvatthama. Lord Sri Krishna, appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings by his own potency, and as Virat Rupa, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life, kindly enlightened me by describing his transcendental characteristics. So I read this entire verse, although certain parts of it were what caught my attention. So the view that Maharaj Parikshit holds is that his grandfathers, having accepted the boat of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, found that the ocean of the material world is exactly like the water contained in a small hoof print of a calf. So his conclusion is that surrendering to Krishna's lotus feet enables one to cross the ocean of material existence. So this is an interesting point, because every person is actually subjugated under the Supreme Lord's laws and orders, because he's the one who's making the laws, as we find them in Bhagavad Gita. So because of this fact that Lord Krishna is the maker of the laws and the giver of orders, then everybody in this material world is actually meant to be following those orders of Lord Krishna. And by so doing, one will have material happiness and spiritual happiness. So it's by his grace that one may be freed from being held tightly in this material world. If we do actually take to following those laws, then actually it'll be by his grace that one can be freed from being held by so many material concepts, and one will be able to render transcendental loving service to him. So it's actually Lord Krishna who's allowing one to become free from the grip of all these material concepts, and also it's freeing us from all that affection that we actually have for the material concepts we're holding, and also for actually having affection for material things. So this is significant in terms of Maharaj Parikshit's question, because his question is dealing with a material concept. So it's the act of killing one's maternal uncle. So that's a material concept in some sense, because there's a material relationship. So there's a material outlook if one is lacking spiritual vision. Means that one is seeing neither oneself nor the Supreme Lord. So if one just takes the concept of killing a maternal uncle, you know, that could be a material concept. So this ability to go past that liking for material concepts or holding on to material concepts, not that I'm implying that the killing of a maternal uncle is something acceptable necessarily, but rather I'm just trying to point out that there's the necessity to get free of material concepts and rather look at Krishna's laws and Krishna's orders. So, because then one can actually see much more clearly. So, that seeing of Lord Krishna and oneself is actually an order of Lord Krishna's. He puts it this way, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So that's from Bhagavad Gita 1858. Detasha sarva karmani mai sanyasya matparaha buddhi yogam upashritya machitaha satatam bhava. So if one is following such an order given by Lord Krishna, then one would take the position of a servant. It means a person who's devoted to another. That's what servant usually means, completely devoted to another. A materialistic friend in Africa, an older woman, and she's had the same servant probably for 30 years. It's an African woman, a black African woman, and she lives on the property. Every time this lady moves, her servant moves with her. Some accommodation is made for her and her husband. So there's a devoted servant. I mean, I recall once this friend was passing some remark about the servant perhaps not having attended properly to taking care of some jewelry, and I saw the servant peeking through a little crack in the door, and the eyes were so tearful, you know, it was obviously extremely hurtful to her that her mistress was saying something ill of her. But that's actually that kind of being devoted to one's master or being devoted to another. In our case, we're discussing that devotion to Lord Krishna. That is actually the position one needs to take. so much so that one's acting even under his direction. So it means, you know, one's carrying in one's mind Krishna's direction and then one's putting it into action. So a servant there may be instructed, oh, you know, please polish my jewelry or please restring this jewelry. But in our case, and in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, the idea is to take the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and implement them in one's life. So it requires a lot of understanding of the instructions. So Srila Prabhupada writes Like in this particular verse that I read of Devasya Sarva Karmani Mai Sanyasya Matparaha, he's writing that Matparaha translates as under my protection. So it's not merely that one is devoted to Lord Krishna executing his instructions, but it's also been done under his protection just through going through the instruction. So that poor servant that I illustrated just now, I don't know that she was fully under the protection of her mistress, because the mistress was more than ready to criticize the servant. But Krishna does not have that. It's fully under his protection. And and if one is actually functioning in this kind of way of following the some instruction from Bhagavad Gita that's perhaps come through the spiritual master in the disciplic succession, one actually can be confident that it's actually under Krishna's protection that one is performing those, whatever activity one's performing, with that consciousness that one is doing it in a mood that's in devotion to him. So one's whole goal becomes to satisfy Lord Krishna. And I'm highlighting this as the particular position of Maharaj Parikshit having this kind of understanding. And he's so I guess aware of his own lineage, and at the same time very concerned to I guess show where he stands in relation to Lord Krishna. So he speaks of his grandfather Arjuna as showing the mood of devotion to Lord Krishna. So it's often strengthening, like in a family situation, often one finds that children will, and perhaps not even consciously, they'll be emulating, say if it's a boy, will be emulating what the father does, or somehow will be very respectful of whatever path the father has chosen. And in Maharaj Parikshit's case, he's pointing to devotion having been present even in his grandfather Arjuna. So I was looking at this particular thought of Maharaj Parikshit's, and I found a fantastic description of Arjuna on the battlefield, which shows something of his devotion to Lord Krishna. So this is from Mahabharat. Arjuna stood in his chariot, his head hung down. He knew it was indeed time to try to kill his grandfather. Heavy with sadness, he looked at Krishna and replied, "Burdensome is the duty of a Kshatriya in this world, killing those who ought not to be slain. He strives for wealth and power. Yet, O Janardana, I must do your bidding. That is my highest duty. Then drive my horses towards him, that virtuous man of irresistible splendor. Today I will kill Bhishma." So here's Arjuna. So it's not merely, you know, this matter of following instructions of Krishna. Sometimes it's extremely challenging. And in the case of Arjuna, something of his being devoted to his master, Lord Krishna, comes through in that he's been instructed to kill Bhishma, who's actually, he views as his grandfather. So it's a very conflicting kind of situation. But it illustrates something of that incredible devotion to Lord Krishna that's there. I mean, even he acknowledges that he views Bhishma as a virtuous personality, a man of irresistible splendor. But yet, okay, this is what you want me to do. Please take the chariot, because Krishna was acting as chariot driver. Move the chariot towards Arjuna. I'm prepared to do what you ask, which is the killing of Bhishma. So, seeing him killing this foremost Pandava warrior, and seeing that Arjuna wasn't fighting to his full power, Krishna becomes thoughtful. So this is that same particular moment in time. So this is how Krishna responds, and this is just of great interest because I've been trying to illustrate that reciprocal relationship between the person devoted to Lord Krishna and Krishna's protection of the person following the instruction. So Bhishma, this is Krishna being very thoughtful. Krishna thinks, oh, Bhishma could kill the combined armies of the gods and asuras if left unchecked. Unless Arjuna did something that even he would succumb to Bhishma's deadly shafts. Already he was sorely afflicted. So Krishna reflects, I will personally slay Bhishma. I cannot tolerate the slaughter of the Pandavas. Arjuna is not doing what he should do out of his respect for Bhishma. Therefore, I shall lighten the Pandavas' load by killing the best of men in battle. So, this is Krishna's protection. He understands that even though Arjuna is ready to follow the order of killing Bhishma, who he views as his grandfather, there's the thing that Krishna recognizes. There's some little bit of reluctance. He's not, you know, going to do it with his full power because, you know, there's some feelings towards Bhishma, some hesitation. So Krishna's protection is he's going to help the whole situation and he's going to make sure that actually Bhishma is killed. And Krishna, too, considers him the best of men. But this is what's required in order to have the Pandavas gain victory. So there's a description of Krishna, and this is what Krishna does for his protection, and this is such a beautiful image. Taking up a nearby chariot wheel, he raised it above his head as if it were his own favorite weapon, the Sudarshan Chakra. He ran towards Bhishma as a lion might run at an elephant. The end of his yellow silk garment fluttered in the dusty air, resembling lightning dancing on a dark cloud. The wheel in his hand seemed to glow with his own effulgence, and it looked as beautiful as the primeval lotus from whom Brahma was born. Krishna's dark arm appeared like the stalk of a lotus, and his charming face, covered with beads of perspiration, was its filament. So, Krishna performing a protective act, and in fact, one can say serving his devotee, assisting his devotee, and this beautiful description of Krishna taking a chariot wheel ready to kill Bhishma. So there's then the response of Bhishma, who's acting as one devoted to the service of Lord Krishna too. So this is interesting. Krishna's going to be going to kill somebody who's also serving him, but it's the greater interest in this particular case. So Bhishma, his limbs are trembling and his eyes flood with tears. Here was the Lord of the universe breaking his own promise to protect his devotee. So Krishna had vowed he wasn't going to fight. So Bhishma, the Kuru hero, throws down his weapons and stretched out his arms. As Krishna approached him, he called out, "Come, come, my Lord, O Supreme Deity, Lord of all the gods, I bow to you. Seeing you forsake your vow to save your friend and thus fulfilling my own desire, I am satisfied." So Bhishma encourages Lord Krishna to please come. He can kill him. It's fine. So this is the mood of a devotee devoted to the master. So he understands what Krishna is wanting to do. And he's willing to cooperate. So This is truly quite extraordinary when you think about it, that one invites one's own death in service to one's master. And this is a position of Bhishma too. So we're having this interesting interplay of devotees interacting with Krishna and how Krishna does his protective act. So, and Bhishma says, "Fell me from this chariot, O Keshava. Killed by you, O Janardana, I will obtain great good fortune. My name and dignity will be celebrated throughout the worlds." So Bhishma, you know, responds as a Kshatriya does, you know, there'll be a great fame for him, which is very important for a Kshatriya reputation. And his action is of somebody acting in accord with Krishna's direction. So, so interesting how different personalities have different tasks, but having that mood of devotion to Lord Krishna, how they respond. So I'm illustrating all of this because Maharaj Parikshit was pointing to this devotion in his grandfathers. So I'm truly elaborating on it. And perhaps later on I can tie it up with this verse. So Arjuna also acknowledges what Maharaj Parikshit's view is of Lord Krishna. So this is the grandfather that Maharaj Parikshit was referring to. So this is Arjuna's thought. I'm going to express it, quoted. "The military strength of the Kauravas was like an ocean in which there dwelled many invincible existences, and thus it was insurmountable." So this is his great warrior. He's actually seeing that the opposing side is insurmountable. "But because of his friendship," this is Arjuna's thinking, "I, seated on the chariot, was able to cross over it, and only by his grace was I able to regain the cows and also collect by force many helmets of the kings, which were bedecked with jewels that were sources of all brilliance." So Arjuna is also acknowledging his reliance on the grace of Lord Krishna to allow him to defeat these great generals, including Bhishma, that I just described, which those generals that just he himself viewed as an insurmountable force. So that actually comes from the first canto in the 15th chapter, where Arjuna is expressing his view and his own reliance on Lord Krishna and the grace of Lord Krishna to be able to defeat the Kauravas. "So indeed, on the Kauravas' side, there were many stalwart commanders like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and their military strength was insurmountable. And it's compared, that strength is compared to a great ocean. Yet it was due to Lord Krishna's grace that Arjuna, sitting on the chariot, could manage to vanquish them one after the other without difficulty." Now, taking into account Maharaj Parikshit's view of Lord Krishna, one can consider that actually, on the opposite end of the scale, it's only fools who would view him as ordinary. I'm taking a quote. "This Krishna is no other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. He is the first Narayan, the supreme enjoyer. Thus, he's moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni, just like one of us, and he's bewildering us with his self-creator's energy." So this is stated by Bhishma Dev. So, you know, he's considered inconceivable, so difficult to understand Lord Krishna. And he appears to be moving amongst all these personalities as though he's one of them. But actually, he's clearly the original personality of Godhead. So Bhishma Dev, he recognizes this. So a devotee seeing Lord Krishna in action, it's quite clear what the position is of Lord Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he says that Bhishma Dev is in fact one who knows the principles of transcendental knowledge. So his confirmation of Krishna being the original personality of Godhead is also corroborated. And this is interesting. Srila Prabhupada says, even an impersonalist, so an impersonalist who's trying to deny that original form of Lord Krishna, and there's a very famous impersonalist, Sankara, he actually couldn't help but recognize that the Supreme Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond the material creation. So even an impersonalist who's trying to deny that personal form of Lord Krishna can't help but acknowledge this personality is beyond the material creation. So again, that idea is not ordinary when he's moving amongst all these other personalities. So I think I'm trying to point to something of these different personalities, Maharaj Parikshit, Arjuna, his grandfather that he was pointing to, and this recognition of the mercy of Lord Krishna. I'm trying to point to the extraordinary nature of Lord Krishna. So he's also the creator of the material world. And so his coming amongst human beings, is actually very bewildering. And Lord Krishna's interpretation of those that are considering him to be one of them, like a human being, is that that person is a foolish person. Because such a person lacks knowledge of all the intricacies of Krishna's movements. So we see just in this, I've tried to illustrate it just through three personalities, how intricate it is what Krishna's managing. You know, persons that are devoted to him and how he's responding and putting situations in order and how they're responding to him. So to actually view Krishna as ordinary, I mean, clearly, or just as a regular human being would be a little foolish. Because clearly everything he does is very intricate. So this kind of lack of knowledge, you know, seeing Krishna as a human being, is due to being faithless and also having a demoniac nature because Arjuna points to this. So here's a person that I was trying to illustrate, had this understanding of the grace of Lord Krishna behind everything. And so he actually, categorizes those that view Krishna as an ordinary human being as being faithless and as having a demoniac nature. And he puts it this way. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you've told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. And here is the clue for what is to come. It's by the grace of Lord Krishna that Arjuna, Maharaj Parikshit's grandfather, was able to understand Krishna as the supreme truth and as the perfect being. And Maharaj Parikshit has also been the recipient of Lord Krishna's grace. because he's able to recognize that it was by Krishna's grace that Arjuna was successful on the battlefield. And it's by Krishna's grace that he himself was saved from Ashwatthama's fiery weapon in the wound. And Maharaj Parikshit is setting the scene for receiving transcendental instructions from Sukadev Goswami in response to his questions. So the clue for the purpose, for the response to his question in today's text regarding Kamsa is of why Kamsa failed to understand Krishna is because he was thinking of him as an ordinary human being. So by implication, I am indeed pointing to the fact that Kamsa was of a faithless and demoniac nature. So actually, Sukadev Goswami later on, he says of Kamsa, so this will come a little later, but he says, thus having considered the instructions of his bad ministers, so Kamsa's in the position of a king, Kamsa, who was bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the brahmanas, as the only way to achieve his own good fortune. So Kamsa was a king who didn't take good instruction from sages, from the Shastra. And he's considered a fool because he was acting according to his own plans. This is given by Sukadev Goswami in the same canto in the fourth chapter. And actually no one, Srila Prabhupada writes, has his own plans actually, because everybody's bound by the laws of nature and has to act according to his tendency in material conditioned life. So it's actually a fallacy even to think that one's acting according to one's plan. So it makes one in some sense doubly foolish. So it's actually correct then to say that a person is foolish to be thinking that he's acting according to his own plans for these two reasons. That one is bound by the laws of nature and one has to act according to one's tendency. That's part of one's conditioning or one's learned patterns. So he failed to change his decisions. This is Kamsa. And follow the decisions of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. He just didn't do it. And he received a good instruction. There's a Vasudev when he was trying to reason with Kamsa as to why, when Kamsa raised his sword to kill his own sister on her wedding day, because a voice from the sky, meaning the demigods, were letting him know that actually it was going to be the eighth son of Devaki that was going to be the cause of his own death. His response, you know, it's again, person of not good intelligence, oh well, now's the opportunity to kill his sister, so therefore it'll prevent that future birth. And Vasudev actually is one of those, you know, sage persons who actually gives Kamsa excellent instruction, reasoning why he should not do it. And, you know, that will bring infamy to him, you know, performing such an act on this particular auspicious occasion. And then later on, he sees that nothing penetrates Kamsa. All the reasons that are related to acting according to Shastric laws pass right over Kamsa's head. No interest whatsoever. So the only way Vasudev finally has to tell Kamsa, I'll bring to you each of the children when they're born. Don't kill your sister. You know, you can have each child. And that Kamsa is able to accept because his brother-in-law already has a reputation as being so truthful. So he knows indeed that will take place. So he has to have the practical, concrete thing. So that was Kamsa. He failed really to follow the directions of a saintly person, because had he actually followed Vasudev's reasoning properly, his life would have taken a different course, but he was not capable of doing that. He failed to change his decisions and follow the decisions of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So, and because of his ministers later on, he couldn't make a clear decision about his own welfare. So there's a verse that gets quoted. I like the sound of this verse. So, and it's, I didn't write down, it's from one of the Puranas. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Kaya, Lava Mantra Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddha Hai. If one desires his real welfare, he must associate with devotees and saintly persons and in this way rectify the material condition of life. So that's the means for correcting that affection, that liking for material concepts. And so it requires that association with devotees and saintly persons. And I mean, in Kamsa's case, he literally barred the association. He put the two saintly persons behind bars. So he really tried to avoid it. So I'm going to transition, and I don't know if it's a smooth transition, into something of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and the kind of respect that's shown by devotees for the orders of the scriptures, just by way of contrasting with those that are more foolish or have a demoniac nature. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Sachimata, she speaks echoing this idea of the association of saintly devotees. So she's concerned that she won't be able to see Lord Chaitanya. So this is, so in her trying to find a way that everything works well, because Lord Chaitanya's taken sannyas, so it's definitely not the order of things that a sannyas maintains his contact with his relatives, but she has the desire to be able to see Lord Chaitanya. So she's speaking to a group of devotees, so this is what she concludes. So you know, how to find this balance of, you know, tending to the orders of the scriptures and somehow still being able to express one's devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in this particular case, Lord Chaitanya being her son. So this is Sachimata. Since Jagannath Puri and Navadweep are intimately related as if they were two rooms in the same house, people from Navadweep generally go to Jagannath Puri, and those in Jagannath Puri go to Navadweep. So this coming and going will help carry news of Lord Chaitanya. In this way, I will be able to get news of him. So all you devotees will be able to come and go, and sometimes he may also come to take his bath in the Ganges. I do not care for my personal happiness or unhappiness, but only for his happiness. Indeed, I accept his happiness as my own happiness. So this idea that the activities one performs, so that was that instruction of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that one performs all one's activities in service to him, working under his protection. Sachimata echoes this, so it's in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, I accept his happiness as my happiness. So after hearing Sachimata, all the devotees offered her prayers and assured her that her order, like a Vedic injunction, could not be violated. So the devotees took her position, her status, and something coming from her, thought coming from her, as equivalent to a Vedic injunction. They were not going to violate it in any way. So they would make sure that there would be this coming and going, and that she would be able to get news, at least, of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, he also offers all respects to the devotees present from Navadweep and other towns, and he speaks to them as follows. So this is Lord Chaitanya's particular instruction. So we heard Lord Krishna's instruction that I've been highlighting. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. And here's how Lord Chaitanya gives a very similar instruction to all the devotees that Mother Sachimata is going to rely on as they move between Navadweep and Jagannath Puri. So she says, or he says, my dear friends, you are all my intimate friends. Now I'm begging a favor of you. Please give it to me. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he requested them all to return home and begin chanting his holy name congregationally. He also requested them to worship Krishna, chant his holy name, and discuss the holy pastimes. So this was Lord Chaitanya's request of all devotees. And Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada, he explains that, and this was the instruction that maybe I'm highlighting, making a connection with this particular verse as best I could. He highlights that actually there's many persons that aren't ready to live in a temple or undergo, you know, strict regulations or follow strict regulative principles. So those persons can live at home. So this is Lord Chaitanya's particular instruction and Srila Prabhupada speaking it. So while living at home, it's necessary to install a deity and worship the Lord morning and evening, chant Hare Krishna and discuss Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So this was Lord Chaitanya's request of all devotees. So I'm ending there, having tried somehow to connect this verse with Lord Chaitanya. So if there's any thoughts to expand this discussion.
Ataji, I could not catch. Can you read again? You said something like, Kansa. How Krishna could kill Kansa? That injection. So that Acharya, some Acharya commented. No, you said something. And in the beginning.
In the beginning. Well, I'm not quite sure what you're alluding to, but that was the question that was raised by Maharaj Parikshit. He wanted to know, how was it that Krishna was able to kill Kamsa, who was the brother of his mother? So, therefore, it makes him the maternal uncle of Krishna. So, this was Maharaj Parikshit's question because he says, you know, in the Shastras, it doesn't allow for that kind of killing. And what I mentioned, maybe the part that you were asking, is that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he's looking at this particular verse with this question raised by Maharaj Parikshit, he says that the implication of the question is that actually it's something that Krishna should not have done. That's what's implied in the question being asked by Maharaj Parikshit. That, you know, it's going against Shastra. So why did Krishna go against Shastra? Why did he break a law or an order given in the Shastras? Is that what you were alluding to?
Yeah, very nice. So actually, I want to add this something here. Actually, Devaki was not the real sister, means, you know, of Kansa. They were born from two different fathers. Actually, Ugrasena was the father of Kansa, and Devaka was the father of Devaki. And of course, Devaka and Ugrasena, they are same father. That's called Ahuka. So in one sense, he, you know, Kansa is not a real brother of, you know, blood relation, only brother of.
Yes,
Devaki.
I think in one of the classes it was pointed out that it was cousin, actually.
Say again?
That Kamsa was a cousin. In one of the classes we had, it was pointed out that Kamsa was a cousin of Devaki.
Yeah. And also, one more point, that whatever Krishna says, and whatever Krishna, that is religion. Whatever Krishna does, that is religion. So nothing is beyond Krishna, you know. There is a very nice verse, I don't remember. Vasudeva para bhakti, Vasudeva para, something, Vasudeva para makha. So that means Vasudeva means Krishna is everything. So whatever his action, he performs, shown to us, that's religion. We cannot go any against that.
Thank you, Karuna Nidhi Prabhu. Indeed, he is the source of those laws, and he's the giver of orders. So indeed, everything rests finally with him, how he wishes to conduct things. So yes, and often that's dealt with, that nobody else can manufacture religion. It's only Krishna. So, yeah. Because he's the personality who can actually make sure that those orders and laws are carried through. Anybody else can manufacture something, but can they actually make sure that it's implemented properly and actually takes place that way? Most unlikely. But Krishna, because of being the extraordinary personality he is, he can actually arrange all kinds of intricate situations and manage all of them such that in each and every situation, it's those laws and orders are followed in the correct way. He makes sure that it happens. So, yes, indeed. It's not just making some laws and orders, but he actually makes sure that it's properly executed. And that's why, you know, we hear that when there's the laws and orders are not being adhered to and it's all falling away and religion appears to be crumbling, that's when he comes again to set everything in place. So he's always there to make sure that it's been properly done. Yeah, and this is very wonderful because it's the source of everybody's happiness, material and spiritual, to be following those laws. But this particular verse is seeming to examine Krishna acting against a law. So how is it that he actually did some killing, you know, of his maternal uncle, or you could say a cousin? I don't know what would be the... Yeah, it still would be an uncle, even if it's cousin. So an uncle, you know, how is he actually seeming to break a law? So that's the interesting question posed by Maharaj Parikshit. I've tried to examine it from the point of view that, you know, Krishna's in that unique position. So I'm very happy you're highlighting that. He is in that unique position that he's the maker of the laws, he's the giver of orders, he makes sure it's maintained, he even arranges intricate situations where things play themselves out, and he makes sure that those laws and orders, the laws and the orders are adhered to. So, his killing of somebody who's acting outside of law and order, it's completely his prerogative, and it's exactly what brings about the breakdown of law and order, so to speak, when persons are acting according to their own whims, not under Krishna's plans. So he's been very consistent. So it's actually not surprising that it's not on a material plane, oh, this is a relative, but rather it's a person of a demoniac nature, a person just wishing to act according to their own plans, supposedly being able to, even thinking that they're able to do that is a mistake, but then Krishna has to bring that all in order, and that's actually what he's going to be doing in his pastimes, and indeed what he was already on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, that's what he was doing. He was wanting to have the Pandavas emerge victorious because they are the actual followers of law, the laws and orders of Krishna. They're acting under his instructions, so he wants to see them victorious. So that's why he even arranged that whole battle, so it would be an opportunity to wipe out those that are wishing to act according to their own plans. Yeah,
one more thing. That is, Krishna can't tolerate everything except two things, many important. Go Brahmana, Hitastha. cows, anything happens against cow, anything happens his devotee is Brahmana. So because Kansa was giving constantly torturing every, you know, Brahmana, sadhu, saintly person, everything, that he could not tolerate. And for example, Lord Chaitanya's case. So Lord Chaitanya, even when there was offense made by Sachimata to the Advaita Acharya, that means, you know, Sachimata, out of affection, love for Gauranga Mahaprabhu, she committed some offense in her mentally. Oh, why this? Because of Advaita Acharya, my son became sannyas. You know, I have lost already one son. Now this son also gone. I will do, you know, filial love. So this, of course, Mother Sachi, she is the mother of Mahaprabhu. But Mahaprabhu could not forgive her. Then she couldn't, Mahaprabhu could not see him. When Mahaprabhu came to Navadvip, then no, he refused to see Sachi Mata. But because this offense was, you know, nullified by, you know, when she, Mother Sachi, somewhere, I don't want to elaborate, if you remember that, how she took forgive from the Advaita Acharya, you know, so then only Mahaprabhu. So this is...
Yes, yeah, Krishna always protects his devotees. That's the extraordinary part, that always there's that protection. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Masaji. Thank you for your class. I probably won't say my second half, but I would like to say this, if anything. Today's the parents' day of two other great Vaishnavas, Mother Rohini, I'm glad she's here, and our sister, Bhakti Vinodini. And and I'd just like to say just a couple things of how much they left an impression, not only on me, but on so many people. There's been so many people I realize that she's left an impression on, a very good impression. I talk a lot, but she may not talk a lot, but she leaves a greater impression on people. And there's a quote that reminds me of her, we are told to let our light shine, and if it does, we won't need to tell anybody it does. Lighthouses don't fire cannons to call the attention to their shining. They just shine. And so there was one incident that happened. I had the opportunity to go over one worshiper of Lord Shiva. He's been here for many years. He's come to the Hare Krishna temple. His name is John the Baptist. So I had the opportunity to do kirtan with another devotee, Sunny, over his house. And somehow or other, Mother Rohini came up. And his eyes lit up. He was like, Mother Rohini, really? So then he started glorifying her. And he said, you know, in the early 2000s, she used to babysit his kids. And he just had all wonderful things to say about her. And that way I really realized, you know, just by your character, you could leave an impression on someone. And there's a very nice quote that says, I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. And so that's why I'm very grateful to be in association with her. So I just wanted to mention that. I could end here now, but I would like to comment on, maybe you would like to explain one situation. You were making a connection between Lord Chaitanya's Parents' Day and the class you gave. One point you made is that Arjuna, he really realized by Krishna's mercy he was able to defeat, you know, the Kauravas and the great generals. And so I'd like to make a connection. In a chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita called The Advent of Lord Chaitanya, in the first few verses of those pages, thank you, Subhal Prabhu. In the first few chapters of those pages, it mentions that devotees of the Lord and the Lord are compared to the moon. And others are, of course, compared to the stars. So although the Kauravas were the majority, and Arjuna, Pandava, and Krishna were the minority, they still won because they were modest moons and not arrogant all-stars. And so that goes to my question. My question is essentially this, is that when Lord Chaitanya appeared, this seems to be signs of greatness, signs on his feet, signs in astrology. When Krishna appears, signs of greatness. When Bhaktisiddhanta appears, signs of greatness. So the tendency is that when we come to Krishna consciousness or anything, we try to I was just talking to another devotee about the baby ceremony. The baby went at the beginning of the, I don't know what it's called, but the baby either chooses between the Bhagavatam or some money. And if the baby chooses the money, everyone's like, oh, you're destined for, you know, this is a bad omen. But we see that even though the Samartha Brahmanas and the other Brahmanas in India, their purity and knowledge was the majority, and Prabhupada's disciples' purity and knowledge was the minority. But how is it that they were able to spread the Krishna consciousness movement throughout the world? Because there's greatness within everyone. Everyone has Krishna Shakti Vina, Kalika Leta Dharma, Krishna Nama Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tata Pravartana. And so, what are some steps one can take for to not be so attached to these external signs from the beginning of life, whether you choose the Bhagavatam or money, or whether your astrology is good, or whether you've done something like Bhakti Siddhanta? These signs are really insignificant because Krishna is the supreme controller. He's in control of our destiny. So if he sees we're sincerely, we don't need all these upadis, these signs, these titles behind our name. All we need is our love and devotion. So maybe you could explain some of that. How insignificant are these, or are they really significant at all? So,
gosh, it's quite late. Oh, but we did add a different schedule today. Yes, yeah, I was suddenly thinking, oh, why is the time like that? Then I remembered we actually had two kirtans for the deities. your question has to do with, often there's this focus, even like in early childhood, that the correct choice is made in the direction of devotional life as opposed to a kind of more materialistic life, symbolized by the money versus the Srimad Bhagavatam. So your question was looking at how could one go past labeling that happens, or even all those material things that are added to someone, one's title, one's external appearance, whatever it is, maybe on a more subtle level, even choices one's made. How does one go past that and rather just focus on the devotional aspect of a person, yeah? So, from the point of view of a person looking at someone, if one's looking with the proper understanding that the external covering, even that the mind and the intelligence, the subtle body is still separate from the actual identity of the person, meaning that their actual identity is that entity that is connected to Krishna. So one has to wade past all, and that's what you were pointing to, you have to wade past all the external stuff, the titles, the external presentation, even past history of choices made. So how does one actually continue to hold on to that concept that actually I have to try and see this entity in relation to Lord Krishna, because that's actually who this entity is. I mean, it's stripping away all of that. How do you strip it so that you really are just able to see that soul? The ability to see the soul or even communicate as a soul to another soul, like my spiritual master gave a whole lecture on this, communicating soul to soul. It has to do with shifting focus internally oneself to what Krishna has already instructed. So if one shifts the focus to, okay, Krishna's instruction is that in actions one's performing, one should actually be doing it as service to him, something to please him. So one carries that idea, that instruction with one. So one is viewing another entity and one remembers, okay, Krishna said that one needs to perform all actions in such a way that they're pleasing to him, they're in service to him. So when one looks at another entity, one's going to think, okay, I want to perform some action that's going to be pleasing to Krishna in this particular interaction, dialogue. So when one's dealing with people, one is dealing with so much of that external stuff, so much of it. I mean, persons will have their particular, those choices they've made in the past have dictated something of their present circumstance, and one is hearing some of the way that their thinking is, some of the way they use their intelligence, some of the choices they're making, and one has to pray for intelligence that somewhere in that whole learned pattern, repeated pattern thing, one can find some opening to draw the person's attention to the fact that they have a relationship with Krishna. One has to use a great deal of intelligence, but in some way, one has to always find a way to also for oneself push those things aside and find some glimmer of some sort of interest in. It's gone. So if one can somehow help a person to be conscious of some instruction of Krishna, some instruction that you can see that the person may be able to connect with, in that way, one will have performed an action that's pleasing to Lord Krishna, because one has actually helped someone else to draw their attention to an instruction of Lord Krishna. So the first part is be knowing oneself, some particular instruction that is important to one, that may have come from one's spiritual master, that one's carrying with one all the time. And I'm using the one that was the highlight of this class, that one performs all actions for Lord Krishna, all activities in consciousness of him. So one tries to do that. So anytime one's carrying, because one's carrying that instruction, one always looks for an opportunity and does it in a delicate, thoughtful way. I mean, often, like depending upon the culture one comes from, in some cultures, you just slam a person with what they should or shouldn't be doing. It's better not to do that, because either you hit resistance, or if a person's very passive, they'll just nod yes, yes, but internally they're thinking no, no, no. So one finds an opening always. And in that way, because of being very careful and thoughtful, one will have pleased Krishna. So one will have performed an action that's pleasing. So one doesn't take all that external mess, that everything. One understands it's there, but one always just looks for an opening.
So I would like to apologize. This is a last 2 second comment. It's Mother Rohini's birthday and her sister Bhaktivinodini, but actually that devotee, John the Baptist, he was glorifying their whole family, including Vishwakarma. And that's how powerful, you know, devotees have an impression on others. So it's just made me realize how I could follow in their examples to some extent. Of course, I'm not, because I always run my mouth, but maybe in the future I could aspire to become more humble like them. So thank you. Hare Krishna.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And we certainly appreciate that entire family and the service, the very dedicated service they perform. So it's very wonderful and auspicious that it's fallen on this particular day of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. And indeed, one prays that one can also perform all one's actions in service to Lord Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.